Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the war on gold when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000 a year, you pay about $7,650 in Social Security taxes. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income? And then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance. Instead of paying your income tax 17% of that $50,000 twice. But you know the IRS makes you pay 15% of that $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. So that means that you pay 17% of the $7,650 twice. That's a little bookkeeping trick, but that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that was just real special. If you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And the Tax and Status School is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and then click on to the email and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. I want you to do it right now before you forget. Hey, we've been talking about this thing of the War on Gold, written by Anthony Sutton back in the 1960s, and you can rest assured that your government hates gold. Hates gold. And Sutton nailed down the reason why. Because they can't manipulate or control you with gold. If you want liberty, you have to have gold. If you want slavery or you want political oppression, you need paper money. It's always been that way. It's been going on for thousands of years, as I showed you last time. But, you know, we haven't learned anything. And if we have, it's so well hidden, I don't think anybody's ever going to dig it out. Now, we've been through this paper money collapse in America before. It happened in 1783 and 1929. We have been through this before. The excesses of the paper money system from 1913 to 1929 produced a collapse, which went into bankruptcy. That's what the Depression was. It was the bankruptcy of the United States government. And we couldn't pay our debts, and so we increased the value or the price of gold from $20.67 to $35. We defaulted on 60% of our debt. That's what the bottom line was. And there was a tremendous price to pay for the American people. We lost our farms. We lost our homes. We lost our jobs, we lost our property, and we had to start over again. All right? Now, that was in the 1930s. That's behind us. But we didn't learn anything from that. And so we continued on. In fact, we complicated the problem. We blamed gold for the problem. Then we took the gold out of circulation in 1933. And then we went into a fiat money system in 1971. And here we are today, about, you know, 40 years later, 71, 81, 91, 101, no, 35 years later, and we're facing the same thing again that we faced in 1783 and 1929, the collapse of the economy again. Now, when the economy collapses, you don't get herpes or you don't get AIDS and die. Life goes on. It just goes on, and it's not nearly as pleasant. Now, there are other complicating factors that I pointed out to you last time, but let's take a look at these complicating factors, and for some of you, maybe there's some salvation. You know, if you get off of paper money and go back to hard currency, you know, you can recover. You can recover. I did it. I was a practicing communist for many years, and I woke up one day and I said, you know, this communism over here ain't all it's cracked up to be. It hasn't worked very well for me. And in fact, I looked through the history of it, and I can't see where communism has ever worked very well for anybody. I guess it works well for those at the top of the pyramid over here, but for those of us that are down here at the bottom, you know, putting the sewer pipes together, it doesn't do much for us. So I thought I'd point that out to you and point out maybe a solution or two along the way. Going back to the Chinese now, remember we were talking about the Chinese. The Chinese government decreed that paper money was to be accepted without question as equivalent to hard money. Now, this is back in 1300 AD, 700 years ago. It was ordered by law that what in the future should be stipulated for in iron and copper money should be paid partly in bills. These would have a value corresponding to that of metallic money. Well, ultimately, the oppressive Mongol paper money system was a major factor in their expulsion from China. It was not until the 19th century and the penetration of Western ideas and practices that the Chinese again adopted their paper currency. After World War II, that fiat money was used to generate one of the worst inflations on record. So the Chinese, after their initial experiment with paper money back in the 13th century, when it collapsed, they didn't go back to paper money until we in the West introduced it again in the 1800s to China. That was the British introduced it again when we went over there and conquered them. So they learned their lesson for about 600 years, or, you know, 13, 14, 15, about 500 years. They learned from that. Went back to hard money and did all right. Now, we Americans over here, in fact, the world today, you know, you may be listening to me over in Europe or around the world in Asia or someplace else, Africa. I don't care where you're living, there's gold and silver available. And if you will learn how, that's what our program here at the law school is all about. It's to get off of communism, to go back to practicing that which works. It's called the Ten Commandments. I know it's religious, and I know it's repulsive, and I know that it's sickening. But I'm just pointing out to you that the alternative to the Ten Commandments doesn't work well. And the Ten Commandments work so well that they produced the wealthiest, most powerful single empire in the history of the world called the United States of America, and did it in 113 years. I showed you that in the last program. And I'm going to go back and read that paragraph to you again. In the statistical economic history of the United States, one can find truly wondrous things. American real wages for the working man tripled in the years between 1850 and 1913. When we practiced the Ten Commandments in gold and silver coin, just weights and balances, and thou shalt not steal, American real wages for the working man. I can't speak for the bankers and the politicians, no. Maybe they didn't do as well. But for the farmers and the working man, it tripled in the years between 1850 and 1913. And the U.S. gross domestic product increased 500%, having an average 4.3% annual growth rate from 1870 to 1913. Now remember, again, that was with gold and silver coin, the Ten Commandments. Hell, even if you were to believe in evolution, and then you didn't go to church, and you just went back to gold and silver, you would be doing exactly what we did, which produced the phenomenal success that we had when we had it. I mean, you don't have to start going to church, you know, or start flipping beads through your rosary, you know, to practice gold and silver coin. Hell, you could be an atheist and do that, couldn't you? Now, that was achieved even with the enormous real damage caused by the Civil War. Even more wondrous is the fact that it was done without any inflation You got that? No inflation of fiat paper money. There was no Federal Reserve. This highly productive era was based upon the barbarous relic. That's what they call it. Gold is a barbarous relic of the Middle Ages. Well, okay, but the barbarous relic of the Middle Ages called gold made China the most successful and prosperous country, or the civilization that it was back in the Middle Ages. And then they got off into paper money, and it ruined them. Then they got off of paper money, went back to specie again, and started doing all right. Now, I'm just pointing out that in every single case in history, if you've got an exception to the rule, I'll put it on the air for you. But in every single case in history over 4,000 years, gold and silver has created every major empire, and paper, or debasing the currency, it doesn't have to be paper, you can debase the currency in other ways, but debasing the money has always been the cause of the demise of those very same empires and civilizations, without exception. Now, if there is an exception, let me know, would you? So that's why when I listened to Helicopter Ben telling us how he's gonna bring stability and a soft landing and all this with more paper money, I kind of scratched my head and said, Jesus, Ben, you know, this guy Ben Bernanke is called Dr. Bernanke. He's got a PhD. He's got letters after his name. There isn't a single success in 4,000 years, and this fool with letters after his name says, but I'm going to lead you to a soft landing in the housing market and lead you on to ever greater prosperity with more and more paper money at the rate of 10% increase per year. I mean, okay, kids, have we taken leave of our senses? Just thought I'd share it with you. Now, I'm reading this little paragraph here from a publication which is called The Privateer. I think I can cite now from The Privateer. I got a bad letter from this guy. His name is William Buckler. He's probably a hell of a nice guy, but I reported on this privateer, you know, in times past. And then, as is my habit, I give credit, you know, where credit's due. So I said, well, this guy Buckler's got his head screwed on straight, and he writes a newsletter called The Privateer, and it comes from Australia. I'm sorry to report that we Americans have to go to Australia in order to get any straight news. You're not going to get it from Katie or Brian or Charlie Gibson, but you can get it from this guy, The Privateer. But I got a bad report. I write him a letter, and I said, well, now I reviewed your paper here on the air, and he sent me a letter, and he said, Well, I don't want you to do that. And on top of that, he wasn't very complimentary. Now, I thought that was kind of surprising when I got the letter. But the other day, I got another one where it says copyright. It says reproduction in any manner without permission is a breach of law and property rights. And then right under that, he added a little piece that says permission hereby given to quote short excerpts provided full attribution is given. Well, hell, I always give my... my sources full credit for what they write. But anyway, I guess that means that we can go back to citing again from The Privateer. And I didn't do it for a long time, but I've always recommended it. But it's hard to recommend something that you can't cite from or read from, you know what I mean? It's pretty hard to say. Now, I'm not going to tell you what The Privateer says, but it's really a good paper. No, I just cited from page 4 of The Privateer, The Historical Rewind of a Former Time. Now, this newsletter is 12 pages and comes out 25 times a year, about every 2 weeks. And I recommend this one, number one, because for most of you people listening to me right now, you are not very well trained in economics, most of you. And there's a lot of good economic newsletters out there, but when you read the International Forecaster, and God bless him, Bob Chapman does a hell of a job. But, you know, he writes letters in there like the IMF and the SEC and the WB, and you know, if you don't know what those letters stand for, you know, you can't keep up with that guy. Now, SEC means Securities and Exchange Commission, and the IMF means the International Monetary Fund, and WB means the World Bank. And the thing I like about Buckler is that he explains that. If you want an economics newsletter, which is Economics 101, from a guy that has his head screwed on straight, then I can't give a better recommendation than the Privateer, which comes from Australia. So get this name and address down. It's William A.M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. And publisher is William A.M. Buckler. P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, N-O-O-S-A, Heads, H-E-A-D-S, two words, Queensland, Q-L-D, Queensland, Australia. And it's Queensland 4567, Australia. Now, you can also, they've got a webpage, it's www.the-privateer.com. You got to remember that hyphen goes between the and privateer. And those people down in Australia can spell. And here in America, they wouldn't put that hyphen in there. It belongs in there, and it is in there. And it's www.the-privateer.com. Or if you want to go to their webpage, it's capt@the-privateer.com. Costs you about $180 a year Australian, which, as I understand it, is about $130 a year American. Why don't you call them down there first and ask them what the price in U.S. funds is? If it costs you three times that, it's worth every penny. Every penny. And I can't speak any higher than that. I can't say any more about the guy than that. It's 12 pages. It's easy to understand. It's an international world news newsletter. Concentrates primarily on the United States, and I guess it should because the United States is the number one economic power in the world. But there's pages on Europe and Asia and Australia, you know, page each. And very concise, very to the point, and well explained. So if you are sitting there driving your truck down the highway and you're saying, "Yeah, but I couldn't understand it after I got it," you can understand this one. You can understand this one. Now, the International Forecaster, I ought to give Bob Chapman a little credit here, too. Bob puts out a paper, which you got to be a little bit more advanced to read this. But you don't have to be advanced to read the newsletter. You just have to be a little advanced to understand the economics portions of it. And because he's got things in here, you know, like the production of home loans will slide 19% this year to $2.46 trillion, the fifth highest year on record, and then drop another 14% in 2007 before stabilizing in 2008, says the MBA. Not in your wildest dreams. Now listen, MBA. What in the hell is the MBA? See, that's my complaint about Bob. Well, it's the Merchant Bankers Association, or the M something Bankers Association, and the MBA is a bankers group, and it's called the MBA. And then he says the MBA says ARMs should drop to 19%. Well, what in the hell is an ARM? An ARM? It's an adjustable rate mortgage. But see, he doesn't explain that, whereas Buckler does. So when you see ARMs, then he's going to put in there adjustable rate mortgage. And if you want an education in economics, Buckler is the guy to get it from. If you want information, Chapman can't be beat. But if you're a new kid on the block and you need a little help with economics, this guy Buckler will make it clear and plain to you. Now, I wanted to promote those a little bit because having a little knowledge, firsthand knowledge, not just what I told you, but I mean just having actual knowledge of and by yourself empowers you. You don't want to rely on me anyway. What you want to rely is upon yourself, and you can get a good jump on that helping yourself from the Privateer. And then the International Forecaster is a second one that I recommend, and then a third one is called the Money Changer. If you had those three newsletters, I think you'd be in Fat City. Anyway, the International Forecaster, they've got a webpage too. It's called internationalforecaster@yahoo.com. That's their webpage. Well, it's their email. Internationalforecaster, two words, @yahoo.com. And then the webpage is www.theinternationalforecaster.com. www.theinternationalforecaster.com. And I'll give you the name, address, and phone number. It's about $130 a year. Worth every penny. Every penny. In fact, if you paid $500 a year, you would not be cheated in the least. He doesn't charge that much. That's why I say it's worth... You know, I mean, you can sit here and watch Katie and be entertained, or you can sit here and read the International Forecaster and be informed. So if you want to be entertained, Katie is the place to go. If you want to be informed, the Privateer and the Forecaster are the place to go. Now, let me go back here to the gold story with the Byzantine Empire. By contrast to the Chinese paper system, the Byzant, mentioned in Marco Polo's description of Kublai Khan's empire, was a gold coin minted in the Byzantine Empire, and which represented the most extraordinarily successful use of the gold standard in history. Got that? The most successful use of the gold standard in history comes from the Byzantine Empire. The 1,000-year history of Byzantine gold coins minted from 491 A.D. to 1453 A.D. began long before the Chinese discovered paper money, and it lasted long after the collapse of the Chinese paper money system of Kublai Khan's mulberry bark receipts. From 491 A.D. to 1000 A.D., the solidus, or Byzant, was coined with a fineness of 0.95, as are many of today's gold coins. Now, this is a greater fineness than the old 8.5 coin melt bars found in Fort Knox today. And after the collapse of the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire dominated trade from the Atlantic Ocean to China. And under Constantine, the gold solidus became the standard for the next 800 years and the basis of a vast trading empire stretching throughout the then known world. The quality of Byzantine coinage was such that it was accepted freely, without question, from China to Britain, from the Baltic Sea to Ethiopia. Byzants were used not only by Byzantine travelers and merchants, but by those of other countries as well. Even medieval England's exchequer rolls were kept in Byzants, and not until Alexium in the 12th century did the Byzantine Empire fall. In summary, the first 2,000 years of coinage up to the end of the Byzantine Empire suggest the crucial role of gold in any monetary system. Gold coins circulated by weight with other metallic coins and barter. Barter inhibited debasement of gold coins because it offered alternative media of exchange. In the Byzantine Byzant, of constant purity and fineness, we can identify the first worldwide gold standard. Inflation in the form of reducing the monetary standard and speeding up the primitive coinage process was known. Debasement, that is, reducing the weight or purity of gold coins, was also known. And plated gold coins were used as early as the 5th century B.C., and A.R. Burns comments as follows on such plated coins. They are of interest because they offer the nearest approach in the ancient world to modern paper money. They were a currency of which the metallic value was much less than the legal value, and they offered far more scope for inflation without resort to recoinage than debasement or devaluation. From this early historical experience, we observe that states always held the power of coinage close to the seat of political power, and that war, corruption, or just plain greed led to debasement and inflation of the monetary supply. Only a system with full weight coins offers protection against expansion of state political power through the monetary system. In brief, the power to coin money is intimately related to the acquisition of political power. Thus it has always been, and so it is today. Now, I guess I would be remiss if I didn't point out that America now has a bimetallic system. We have gold and silver coin, along with the Federal Reserve notes and our clad coinage. The clad coinage and the paper money, which is all leading us all to ruin, is in full force and effect, and everybody uses it. Well, that is 95% of the American people use it. The other 5%, get this now, 5% of the people of America own 100% of all the gold and silver. It would be better for the other 95% of the people of America to have their full share. But, you know, those 95% of Americans who keep their accounts and their bank balances and their credit cards denominated in paper currency have a choice to make, and they've made it. And I'm not here to save people from their folly. I don't care. No skin off my back. Now, for some of you out there that say to yourself, well, gee, I don't want to get caught holding the old maid, and I would like to prosper. I would like to make money. I would like to get my political and economic freedom back from the government. Hell, it's always been there. You know, we have economic and political freedom guaranteed us under our Constitution. In order for you to give it up, you got to go sign a contract with the bank. They don't impose it upon anybody. You got to go down and request it. You know, nobody came to you and gave you a Social Security number. You had to fill out a form, and you had to request it of the government. Nobody makes you go down and sign up, you know, for Social Security or a driver's license or a marriage license. No, nobody makes you go down to the bank and fill out forms to get a credit card. You do that of and by yourself. In fact, you got to qualify. You got to jump through the hoops. You got to sign on the dotted line to do all that. If you stayed in bed, shut your mouth, and refused to sign your name, you'd still be free. I mean, to enslave yourself, you got to be able to read and write. Well, at least enough to put your mark on the dotted line. You college kids out there with your credit cards, you had to go out and qualify for that credit. You had to sign your name. Now, as a result of that, you've lost your freedom. And the man that's in debt is a credit debt serf. And the objective here is to reduce all of you to serfdom. And government's done that. You see, most people in America have maxed out their credit. They have maxed out their houses. They've used their equity in their homes as a piggy bank. And when this thing turns turtle, you're all upside down. And those of us that have some cash, those of us that have real money, are going to take advantage of you, and you're going to just be mad as hell. For instance, right now, in my neck of the woods, land is selling for $5,000 an acre. In 1979, it was selling for $250 an acre, and it's headed back to $250. And it will. And when I come back in the marketplace and I buy that land that I sold for $5,000 today, and I buy it back for $250, you people that take that $4,750 loss, you're going to just be mad as hell. You're going to say, that Gordon, you know, he took advantage of us, and he cheated us, and stole from us. That's what you're going to say. And all I'm telling you is that I didn't make it this way. I'm just here as a reporter telling you that this is the way it's always been. People that deal in paper money between 1691 and 1792 with the enactment of the Coinage Act went through a 90% loss. It didn't take 100 years to lose 90%, but over that 100-year period, 1691 to 1792, here in the colonies, in the United States of America, in colonial America, through the Revolutionary War, through the Constitution of the United States in 1787, through all of the colonial period, you know, as these colonies were being colonized, the average loss from the use of paper money was 90%. Average loss, 90%. Hell, you've already lost 97% from 1930 to 2000. And from 2000 to 2006, you lost 30%. I mean, come on, kids. It's already a done deal. We've lived through this before. We have the history and the experience of it. And that's what this war on gold is all about. Government and the banks have declared war on gold. Well, of course, they've already declared war on the Ten Commandments and on the Bible and on God and thrown him out. But, you know, that's what made us great. It wasn't paper money that created this great nation of America. It was gold and silver. It wasn't the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto that made America great. It was the Ten Commandments. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto have led us to ruin, not greatness. And it's the Ten Commandments that led us to greatness. And it's our rejection of the Ten Commandments that has led us to ruin. Now, let's get our facts straight. All right, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, this Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law and tax law and courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. And again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, we're reviewing the book, The War on Gold, by Anthony Sutton. And I wanted to give you a couple, three more citations here from The Privateer. Remember, The Privateer is put out by William A.M. Buckler down in Queensland, Australia. And you can go to their website. That's what I would recommend. Just www.the-privateer.com. Well, Buckler goes on to say this. He says, American living standards were going up, up, and up. In 1915, the total output of the United States exceeded that of all of Europe. In 1915, the output of the United States exceeded that of all of Europe combined. The whole vast economic event had only taken 45 years. Now remember, boys and girls, I said to you, if you will shift to gold and silver coin, and if you will start using property instead of profit, and if you will shift from income to increase, you should put $100,000 in gold coin in a hole in the ground in 36 months. And the history of it, using this principle, is that in the United States of America, we did that in 45 years. We became the world's number one industrial and economic power in 45 years. Boys and girls, America could do that again in 45 years or less if we would go back to gold and silver coin. Now, I don't expect the nation to do that, but you can do that as an individual. And my experience and the experience that we have here at the law school is that any family, any individual that will go back to practicing sound money will start making property and increase immediately. And that will grow exponentially, and it grows 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. It grows geometrically, exponentially, rather than arithmetically. The problem with paper money is that it grows arithmetically, and then it's taxed 74%. There isn't any way in hell that you can operate as a working man and make any money in a paper economy. It's designed to make money for the banks and the politicians and the multinational corporations, but it doesn't do anything for Joe Sixpack. Now, it was also the greatest feat of industrialization ever seen. Between 1865 and 1915, more new wealth was produced by the United States than ever existed in all of human history. I'm going to read that to you again. You got this period of time now. It's 1865 to 1915. Between 1865 and 1915, more new wealth was produced by the United States of America than had ever existed in all of human history. You got that, kids? Now, since 1950, we've been in the process of throwing that away. In 56 years, we have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation to the world's number one debtor nation. Now, if you want to join that club, well, you're in it. If you want to get out of that club, then let's go back to gold and silver coin. America's global challenge, freedom and liberty. Well, the old world of Europe reeled. Here was a near mortal challenge, not because of the new wealth that was being created inside the United States, but because the ideas and principles which made all of this new wealth possible. It was these American ideas which were a mortal challenge to the old regimes all over the world. By putting these ideas into action, America showed that human happiness was possible and that all such happiness depended upon individual freedom and liberty. Millions of people flowed from Europe, Japan, and even China and Russia to the United States simply to live free. Hell, it's still that way today. You got 20 million Mexicans came to this country because Mexico is so poor. And those 20 million Mexicans come here, they use paper money. For them, it's better than where they came from, but the ultimate end of it is total economic collapse. And then out of that will come something new. I suspect that what's new coming out of this economic collapse is going to be the New World Order and the cashless society with the chip in your right hand, as we see in Revelation 13:16. That would be my guess. I don't think we're going to learn much from 4,000 years of history. But now, some of you out there might. I got an email here the other day. It said, Dear Mr. Gordon, I'm a practicing communist and I want to stop as soon as possible. Can you help me? And the answer is, you bet. Yeah, we can help you do that. And thousands of people all over the world have done that. And you can. But if you stick with this paper money program over here, well, then you can expect more poverty. Now, the U.S. political compass needle turned 180 degrees. As Europe was back in 1870, the United States is today, and it is all alone. Back in 1870, just about every European nation called itself an empire. Great Britain had a great big empire, of course, with colonies all over the world. The jewel in the British crown was called India, but France also had colonies and was an empire, as was Germany, Portugal, and Spain. They all had colonies, and even newly formed Italy was trying to get colonies also. These empires today are all gone, figments of the past. Today, it is the United States which has its armed forces on the soil of Great Britain, Germany, Italy, Portugal, and Spain, as well as Japan, and also today inside occupied Iraq. To Americans themselves, the costs of this empire have been and are enormous. U.S. real wages have not climbed since 1973, so says our U.S. Department of Labor, and with external U.S. empire has gone internal repression, and the one necessitates the other. The choice before all of the American public is simple. It's liberty or empire. Liberty or empire. Now, we're going to opt for empire, and then the empire is going to collapse, and you'll have neither empire nor liberty. It's kind of like the American people, they have to make a choice between freedom or security. They're going to opt for security and have neither security nor liberty. The two are mutually exclusive. They don't work together. It's like a virgin whore. You don't get security and liberty. You get security or liberty. One or the other. Americans want security. Okay, well then you can't have liberty as is demonstrated by the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. You want empire? Okay, you've got it. You've got your troops stationed in 170 countries around the world. Hell, there's only 191 countries in the United Nations. There's only about 200 countries in the world. So it says there's only 30 countries in the world that don't have American troops occupying them. And that doesn't include Britain, Germany, and France. And I think the only countries that don't have American troops sitting in them is something like North Korea, Cuba, China, Russia. I mean, think about it. I mean, if the Russians had their troops or the Chinese had their troops in 170 countries around the world, what would you think of that? But it seems to be all right to have American troops in 170 countries around the world. That doesn't seem to bother anybody. And that's what empire is all about. Now, you know, we Americans talk about, well, we're not empire builders and we're not the people that create empires. The hell do you call this? Huh? There's never been... The Roman Empire never had troops in 170 countries in the world, kids. The Romans, they didn't have troops in 170 countries. The British Empire never controlled 170 countries. Never had their troops stationed there. Now remember, this is the privateer. Now, any honest historian who compares these two periods of U.S. economic history, that is 1850 to 1913, and 1973 to the present, will find the difference shocking. The question then has to be clearly shown, or clearly asked, what has made this period between 1973 and today different? The historical economic answer to this is very simple. It's called the real and the hidden costs of empires. Between 1850 and 1913, the United States did not have an external empire, though it acquired the Philippines as a colony in its war with Spain in 1898. But in 1973, the United States stood with bases all over the world, and with a large number of alliances from NATO outwards, as it leaned against the other empire controlled by the USSR through the long period known as the Cold War. All such endeavors entail a real economic cost. In the USSR, it was the accelerating impoverishment of the Russian people. It was a known fact all across the Eastern Bloc that living standards, such as they were actually higher across Eastern Europe than they were in Russia. And finally, the empire fell in a heap between 1989 and 1991, and the USSR collapsed, as will America. We'll collapse just like they did. Now, when this economic collapse occurs, boys and girls, you'll notice that the Russians didn't disappear from the world scene. They're still there. And by the way, they're living a lot better today. You know, once they got off their empire kick over there, if you take a look at Russia's economic growth, it's 8% a year. They're in a plus position. They paid off their external debts 2 years ahead of time, and they've got $265 billion in exchange reserves, cash in the bank. Hell, they're better off. The Soviet Union, the Russians today are better off than they've ever been in their history. Can you believe it? And if the Russians would go back to gold and silver coin, they would become the world's dominant empire. I mean, they would just dominate the world. And so would the Chinese. Hell, I think a little country like Guatemala, if they would just get off paper money and go on to gold, would ultimately, give them 100 or 200 years, take over the world. It's always been the case in the past. Without fail, every empire, city, state, nation that has adopted gold and silver as the basis of their economy and then marched forward has always become a world ruling dominant empire without any exception. And every one of them that adopted paper or debased their monetary system have all collapsed in ruin without exception. Now, how's that for a history, huh? So, inside the United States, over this period from 1973 to 1991, in the fall of the Soviet Empire, the economic result was the same. There, too, external alliances, worldwide bases, and external empire entailed a real economic cost. But while inside the USSR, this real cost had been met through compulsory labor and direct extractions. In the United States, it has been met by falsifications of money. On August the 15th, 1971, the United States disconnected the United States dollar from gold, turning it into a piece of government paper with numbers on it. In March of 1973, all of the Western currencies floated. In the United States, the monetary floodgates opened. In the 1970s, as the costs of the contest with the USSR were met by simply printing the money required. The economic result of this policy showed up a little later as consumer prices inside the United States started to climb higher and higher. The inflationary 1970s had arrived. What was not noticed in the United States was the similarity. In Russia, Russians were paying the economic prices of their empire in the form of a real scarcity of consumer goods. In the United States, Americans were paying the price of their empire in the form of an ever higher monetary price for their consumer goods. The people of both nations were being impoverished on parallel economic tracks. Then, in 1980, the U.S. dollar had been so maltreated that it nearly blew up as gold and eternal, or gold, as gold, the eternal avenger against paper money soared as high as $850 an ounce. And the United States had to retreat from paying its own costs of empire with monetary inflation. So the recession of 1980-81 followed in the United States as Americans paid the economic price in the form of lost jobs while still being afflicted with climbing prices for consumer goods. Economic reality had returned with a vengeance. Now, after the fall of the USSR in 1991, the United States never retreated from its vast global basis system. In fact, it acted to expand the NATO alliance across most of Eastern Europe. The real economic costs of the United States Empire did not contract in the slightest. In fact, they expanded even further. Now, after the invasion of Iraq and the ongoing military occupation there, the real economic costs of all the U.S. bases and the occupation of Iraq have exploded even further. So how is the U.S. political establishment funding all of this, all of this empire? Well, the economic answer is through credit expansion, the expansion of M3 money supply by 10% a year. And the U.S. federal government is borrowing up a storm and at the same time cooking the books in a futile attempt to hide these costs from the American public. But there are Americans who really do try to advance the truth. And one such is U.S. Congressman Jim Cooper, Democrat of Tennessee, who has come out and said that the financial report by the U.S. Treasury Department reveals that, quote, the U.S. debt and commitments total not the U.S. $8.5 trillion of national debt that is reported, but rather it is $49 trillion, six times more than that which is being reported, and the U.S. deficit is not 2.6% of the gross domestic product and shrinking, but it is 6.2% of the GDP, and it is growing rapidly. The true 2005 U.S. fiscal deficit was not $318.5 billion, but it was more than double that. It was $760 billion. Now remember what politicians call the public debt is what they borrow, but the public pays for. Now your politicians, boys and girls, have been out here borrowing up a storm. And they have buried you in debt. And they have inflated your monetary supply. And now you're on the verge of economic collapse. And so now you got to make a choice. Well, do you want to stay the course, or do you want to get the hell out? Now, if you want to practice communism, stay with it. You're on the right track. If you want to practice property and property rights, then that's possible. But you got to make a sudden turn to the right. This is a sharp right turn coming up. Slow down. Sudden right turn coming up. Now, we've had some historical experience, and it's called Not Worth a Continental. Our American bankers have found that for which the ancient alchemists sought in vain. They have found that which turns everything into gold in their own pockets, and it's difficult to persuade them that a system which is so very beneficial to themselves can be very injurious to the rest of the community. At the end of the 18th century and in the first few years of the 19th century, three contemporary powers, France, England, and the emerging United States, suffered through bitter experiences with paper, fiat, and money systems. These experiences were sufficiently unpleasant and indeed tragic in many aspects that for a century thereafter, until the outbreak of war in Europe in 1914, the civilized world operated on a full gold standard with only occasional and temporary lapses into paper money schemes. In general, the 19th century witnessed an intellectual environment fully aware of the virtues of a stable gold standard and the vices of a paper money fiat currency. These three monetary episodes, now virtually unknown in the United States, were, first, the French assignment mandate inflation of 1789 to 1796. The conclusion of this experiment in inflation was the public burning of the Place Vendôme of all paper money. The subsequent introduction of the gold Napoleon began a period when gold had a major psychological impact on the French nation, even down to the present-day French attitudes to gold today in 2006. Then came the British paper pound of 1797 to 1821. This experiment came just after the cross-channel French assignment inflationary chaos, and because of the proximity and the awareness of the French monetary disaster. England backed off the paper pound and by 1821 restored full specie convertibility. Gold convertibility was retained until 1914, but probably because the miserable effects of a paper currency that were fully felt in France were dampened in England, the lesson of gold penetrated less deeply into the British psyche. The third experiment or example is the American Continental Bill of 1775 to 1779, and the lessons of the Continental currency were incorporated into the U.S. Constitution, but they barely penetrated the American consciousness. The error of the Continental was subsequently repeated with the Civil War greenback and naively incorporated into the note-issuing authority of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. The Continental and the greenback experiences had very little lasting impact on the people of the United States beyond the legacy of the classic description, "not worth a Continental," and a now disputed Article 1, Section 10 in our U.S. Federal Constitution, which, by the way, prohibits paper money. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." And the Supreme Court of the United States has ruled that no state can do that, but the federal government isn't a state, so therefore it can. I thought that a government was a state. I thought that the United States of America was a state among the states of the world. I thought that France was a state, and that England and China and Russia were all states. But I guess the Supreme Court came up with a different construction. And as a result of that, we now have fiat paper currency. Well, how do you like it? Some people will sit there and say, "It's the greatest thing since sliced white bread." Well, boys and girls, stick with it. Don't give up a good thing. My conclusion was that it was a bad thing for George Gordon, so I got off of it, and I haven't been sorry that I did. And most of my students report back to me that they're not sorry that they got off of it either. And so here's my challenge. You get off of paper money and you go on to a property, Ten Commandments based, "Thou shalt not steal. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag," and you do that for 36 months. And see if you don't have $100,000 worth of gold buried in a hole in the ground in 36 months. And I'm not talking about some Sharpie, you know, from Harvard or Yale. I'm just talking about the average run-of-the-mill carpenter, plumber, or electrician. You know, the Joe Sixpacks and the Sally Housewife, truck drivers, and common labor out here. You just get onto gold and silver and you start practicing hard money. And I think you're going to see a difference like you can't believe. And George Washington made that observation between 1789 and 1791 in a 36-month period. He said in a letter that he wrote that he could not believe the difference that gold and silver had produced in the United States in just 36 months. Hey, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information, just go to the Law School or the Law Hour webpage at georgegordon.org. And the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course, so until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.